Bill Cosby made his first court appearance in Montgomery County this afternoon. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. County prosecutors have levied criminal charges against him for allegations of sexual abuse. More from WHYY's Bobby Allen, who was in the courtroom for Cosby's initial hearing.
Cosby walked slowly into the courtroom with a cane, wearing a gray hooded sweater and black sweatpants. As television helicopters flew above and reporters yelled questions at him, he ignored all of them. Once inside, Judge Elizabeth McHugh, in a tiny Cheltenham courtroom packed with reporters, asked him if he understood the charges. He said he did, then he slowly walked out of the courtroom and into a black SUV. He then went to a local police station to be photographed and fingerprinted. He's released on $1 million bail. He had to put up 10% of that. Montgomery County District Attorney-elect Kevin Steele says he decided to reopen the case after new information came to light this summer. That's when, at the request of the Associated Press, a judge unsealed documents connected to a civil suit Cosby had settled. Steele says Cosby's accuser, Andrea Constant, has agreed to be identified publicly. He said she considered Cosby a mentor and a friend.
On the evening in question, Mr. Cosby urged her to take pills that he provided to her and to drink wine, the effect of which rendered her unable to move or respond to his advances.
Steele won election as the county's top prosecutor, in part by running on a platform that included going after Cosby. The charges come shortly before Pennsylvania's 12-year statute of limitations on felony sex crimes would have run out. If convicted, Cosby faces years behind bars. His next hearing is scheduled in 2 weeks. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
The Philadelphia Eagles are looking for a new coach. Chip Kelly's looking for a new job. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports on the explanations given by team owner Jeffrey Lurie today after he unceremoniously dumped the head coach last night.
Eagles owner Jeff Lurie gave Chip Kelly his walking papers and announced the move in a note posted to the team's website Tuesday night. Today, Lurie talked to reporters, saying the decision was based on many factors.
Where we're heading, what is the trajectory, what is the progress or lack thereof, and what did I anticipate for the foreseeable future? And that's why the decision was made.
Lurie says he cut Kelly loose a week before the season was over to benefit the team and his former coach.
I wanted to get a jump start on our head coaching search. And I knew already what we were going to do, and I thought having 6 extra days was pretty important because, as you know, it's a chaotic, rushed schedule when you're looking for a head coach. Secondly, I thought, in fairness to Chip, it was a good way for him to also view the marketplace and see what's possible.
Lurie says he had and will talk to players about their future coach.
Be a sponge for what is leadership like in today's football world. You're dealing with 22 to 35 age people and people who are elite athletes trying to perform at the very peak of their profession. And there's a lot of issues. And what is leadership like in today's world? It's very, very different than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
It's unsure how slow or quick a turnaround will be. Kelly traded or let go some marquee players during his tenure. Eagles fans are, as ever, still waiting for their first Super Bowl victory. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
For the last 2 years, Philadelphia got some buzz when it hosted the Forbes magazine Under 30 Summit. It's a 3-day gathering of young entrepreneurs, artists, and innovators. WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies has discovered that there was a significant city subsidy for the event, and the incoming mayor is not happy about it.
Mayor Michael Nutter was excited in 2014 to bring the Forbes Under 30 Summit to Philadelphia. The magazine calls the event the most influential gathering of millennials in the world. Nutter was on MSNBC's Morning Joe program to talk about it.
Philly is a hot town. Greatest number of young millennials, growth of our population of any major city in
That's
the United
so
States
cool.
of America. Yeah, no, it's very exciting. So
there was no mention then or in media coverage of the second Under 30 Summit of any city subsidy for the event, but there was. The money came from the Mayor's Fund for Philadelphia, a city-run nonprofit that distributes several million dollars a year to community projects of many kinds, and also runs and makes significant revenue from the Philadelphia Marathon and the International Cycling Classic. Nutter says the fund is in part there to help market the city, and this was a wise investment.
This is a big deal. It's a big event.
Actually, the Forbes Under 30 Summit is a lot smaller than the huge conventions and trade shows that fill city hotel rooms. But Nutter says this event brings a uniquely connected and influential cadre of entrepreneurs and artists who are here for 3 days.
Doing business, shopping, dining, and then talking about, tweeting about, all kinds of other social media, talking about the fact that I'm in Philadelphia right now at this incredible event, and I just met so-and-so. Or I'm sitting down and having a business meeting, and all of this is taking place in Philadelphia. That, from my perspective, is virtually priceless.
Actually, there is a price. The Fund for Philadelphia paid Forbes $1.7 million to support the Under 30 Summits of 2014 and 2015. A million was paid a year ago, money borrowed from the Philadelphia Industrial Development Corporation, or PIDC, the city's economic development arm. The Fund for Philadelphia was supposed to raise money to repay that loan this week, but PIDC President John Grady says it's apparent the loan won't be repaid on time.
It's really at the city's discretion if they want to extend the term of the loan, repay it, or at some point forgive it.
As of next week, the Fund for Philadelphia will effectively be in the hands of a new mayor, Jim Kenney. If it repays that loan to host the Forbes event, that's $1 million it does not have to spend on Kenney's priorities. And just this month, the fund wrote two more checks to Forbes totaling $700,000 to cover the rest of the city's commitment. Kenney isn't thrilled to learn of these arrangements.
I mean, I think obviously the city should be trying to attract events like this, bring national and international attention to the city. I think, though, you have to talk to the public and kind of let them know what you're doing, because in the end, it's their money. Are these things that are a necessity at the moment? Is there some other way they could be funded?
Besides the buzz and media attention the city got from the summits, there was a 7-page section on Philadelphia in Forbes magazine in January and another coming early next year. There are no plans to subsidize the next Forbes Under 30 Summit. It's happening in Tel Aviv. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
In the wake of Pennsylvania's Marcellus shale boom, the state's starting to see a new wave of development, pipelines. Major companies are investing tens of millions of dollars in infrastructure to carry natural gas to new markets. Think everything from homes and businesses to power plants. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick looks back at one of the biggest stories of 2015.
You could think of it sort of like the natural gas boom 2.0. Thousands of wells have been drilled. Now, thousands of miles of new pipelines are in the works to transport it. The projects are also leading to a power shift as the region's electric grid switches from coal to more natural gas. The Texas-based company Panda Power Funds is developing 3 new gas power plants across Pennsylvania. Spokesman Bill Pentak says their Bradford County plant will come online in early 2016.
This plant was sited precisely where it is because of its access to the abundant, high-quality natural gas that's found a mile to 2 miles beneath our feet.
But as these pipeline projects crisscross the state, they also cut through a lot of people's backyards. Phil Stober is an organic farmer in Lebanon County who's worried about pipelines developed by Sunoco Logistics to carry natural gas liquids from western Pennsylvania to Philadelphia.
All it needs is one accident, and I'm out of business. Because, as you know, in marketing and in sales, perception is reality. And if people think that my fields are 800 feet from a gas line, they're going to say, how organic can you be?
In response to concerns about the new projects, Governor Tom Wolf created a task force to develop best practices for pipelines. It's headed by State Department of Environmental Protection Secretary John Quigley.
Now, this is an honest, serious attempt to get all stakeholders involved in a conversation about how we can improve the development of this infrastructure around the state, minimize community and environmental impacts.
The task force is expected to deliver its final report to the governor in early 2016. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Turning to this evening's headlines, The Army has received a dozen claims totaling more than $300,000 in damages attributed to the wayward blimp that floated over and came to rest in eastern Pennsylvania in the fall. The slow-moving, unmanned Army surveillance blimp broke loose from its mooring at Aberdeen Proving Ground in Maryland and then floated over Pennsylvania for hours on October 28th, causing electrical outages as its tether hit power lines. PennLive.com reports the power company PPL also plans to file a claim to recover costs of restoring power to some 35,000 customers. What caused the blimp to become detached? Well, that remains under investigation. Pennsylvania's three newly elected state Supreme Court justices take their oaths of office next week in their respective home cities. Kevin Dougherty, a Philadelphia judge, will be sworn in Tuesday at the Constitution Center. David Wecht and Christine Donahue, both Superior Court judges in Pittsburgh, will take their oaths there on Thursday and Friday. A former high-ranking appointee of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is among several defendants attacking a lawsuit filed over the George Washington Bridge lane closures. Former Port Authority of New York and New Jersey official Bill Baroni says the suit filed by Fort Lee residents and business owners should be dismissed because it fails to specify what damages occurred and doesn't connect him to the alleged plot. The traffic jams caused massive gridlock in Fort Lee in September 2013. Overcast, 51 degrees at 617. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. This evening's forecast, periods of rain likely, low overnight around 46 degrees. For tomorrow, so expect to see some breaks of sunshine amid the clouds, Thursday's high 48. For New Year's Day, plenty of sunshine, but cooler, high 42. Sunny days right through the weekend, high Saturday and Sunday in the low 40s. Again, 51 degrees at 617. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY-FM. Artwork is often created with posterity in mind. At an area environmental center, though, an outdoor sculpture has been designed to erode from the weather, eventually fading away.
You can see the seasonal changes in the vegetation that's surrounding it and the changes in the sculpture itself.
That story when Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
For top high school band programs, relentless practice is a constant.
So these guys march nonstop, 16, 17 weeks straight. Nonstop. They're marching machines.
I'm Adrienne Hill. A look into what it takes to march in the Rose Parade, next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace follows Newsworks Tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
Friends School Haverford is proud to support WHYY and announces their winter open house on January 13th from 9 to 11 a.m. Friends School Haverford is a nursery through grade 8 co-ed Quaker school on Philly's main line. Friends School Haverford offers an academically rigorous and progressive program for bright students, where the curriculum is truly rocket science and art, calculus, physics, Shakespeare, and more. Open house or tour details online at friendshaverford.org. Friends School Haverford. Hands on, minds on.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. At Kutztown University, a lot of students live near campus, but that doesn't include senior Shannon Peitzer. Every morning, she spends at least half an hour driving to school from her apartment. Keystone Crossroads reporter Marielle Segarra explains why.
Sitting on a couch in an oak-paneled room on campus, Peitzer lays it out for me.
If I were to live in Kutztown, I would be concerned that a landlord would look at me and say, you know, I don't want to deal with you anymore. You're trans. I don't want that in my house. Get out.
Peitzer's a transgender woman. And in Kutztown, it would be legal for a landlord to refuse to rent her an apartment or to kick her out for that reason.
And where does that leave me? That leaves me on the streets.
Federal and Pennsylvania laws prohibit landlords, employers, and others from discriminating based on race, religion, gender, but not gender identity or sexual orientation. There are local laws that ban discrimination, too, but of the thousands of municipalities in the state, only 34 offer those last two protections. Peitzer lives in one of those cities, Allentown. Kutztown has no anti-discrimination law at all. So for some LGBT students who live near campus, simple questions from a landlord, like, what'd you do this weekend, can feel loaded. James Kerrigan is a grad student, and he's gay.
I say, oh, I went on a date. and then have to think, do I want to change the gender? Do I want to just say I went out with this person and they, you know, use a gender-neutral pronoun? It causes a lot of anxiety.
Kerrigan is working with Peitzer and other students to pass an anti-discrimination law in Kutztown that includes gender identity and sexual orientation. They're getting guidance from a statewide advocacy group called Equality PA. Ted Martin is the executive director.
This is the promise of America, that everyone gets a fair shot, that everyone has an equal playing field. That's all this is.
This year, a polling firm called Susquehanna Polling and Research asked Pennsylvania residents whether they'd support a law that bans discrimination based on gender identity or sexual orientation. 74% of respondents said they did. There are opponents in some places who argue these laws could violate a landlord or business owner's religious freedom. But from Martin's perspective, the local laws don't go far enough because they leave the state with a sort of legal patchwork.
For example, you can be protected quite well in Philadelphia all day. You can go across the border into Montgomery County, Bucks County, or Berks, and find yourself really out in the cold.
But he says the local laws can be part of a bigger strategy. They're a way to light a fire under state legislators. He got that idea from the lawmakers themselves.
They would often say to me, you know, years ago, well, you know, I can't vote for something here in Harrisburg. You have to show me that there's grassroots support. You have to show me that the community's behind these kind of things.
A local first strategy was used in another campaign you may have heard of.
Right now, a live look from Washington, D.C. The White House is lit up as a rainbow following a historic ruling today from the Supreme Court.
The people advocating for marriage for same-sex couples pushed for laws state by state. The idea was that once a lot of states had legalized it, the Supreme Court would be more likely to rule in favor, too. Ultimately, it did. In Pennsylvania, the local first approach has helped change the mind of at least one legislator, Representative Michael Hanna, a Democrat from Lock Haven. This session, he's sponsoring a bill that would update the state's anti-discrimination law to include gender identity and sexual orientation. That's a new development for Hanna.
I guess I kind of grew up in a time and place where anything other than heterosexual orientation was pretty much closeted and not talked about.
Hanna says he had a change of heart partly because his two sons are always talking to him about LGBT issues. But he says these local laws have also made him and other legislators pay attention.
A lot of people's eyes were open to what we either chose to ignore or just didn't see.
There's a companion bill in the Senate, too. Combined, the bills have more than 100 co-sponsors, Republican and Democrat. In Kutztown, the borough council has tabled the proposed local law, citing concerns about cost. Instead, and here's the great irony, the borough is waiting to see whether the state passes its law. Advocates say it'd be better to have both laws. For now, they have neither. Marielle Segarra, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the collaboration. To see other stories in our housing series, check out keystonecrossroads.org/housing. Many artists spend a lifetime trying to build a legacy, but one recent installation at the Schuylkill Center for Environmental Education was instead built to disappear slowly over time. WHYY's Nima Rishania headed to Philadelphia's Roxborough neighborhood to take a look.
Take a walk through the woods at the Schuylkill Center for Environmental Education on the edge of Philadelphia, and it won't take long for you to run into Non-Object Number 1, an art installation by local artist and professor Jake Beckman. Over the next 10 years or so, the wooden sculpture will degrade into the ground. This land was once used for farming, and Beckman says the structure will fortify the soil with the local woodland fungi it was stripped of many years ago.
This was a very disturbed area. This was used for a lot of farming. And so the species, the biodiversity of many plants, but particularly in my interest, fungus, is less in this area. And so part of the idea was bringing foraging, finding examples of fungus from other parts of the property and kind of bringing them and reintroducing them to this part of the property.
The piece looks like a pyramid of small craters. Each crater has been filled with wood chips that have been inoculated with a fungus. The area has already changed since its installation in April, says the Schuylkill Center's Director of Environmental Art, Christina Catanese.
You can see the seasonal changes in the vegetation that's surrounding it and the changes in the sculpture itself. But then it presents almost infinite opportunities to look closely and see what's happening on the tiniest scale. And I think it presents an opportunity to practice close observation in a way that we don't often do.
Beckman, who comes by the site about once a month to check on it, says the sculpture is already fitting in with its surroundings a bit more.
Kind of stood out in the landscape a lot. You know, it was pretty glaring. And then as time has progressed, it's weathered and started to blend in a little bit more.
The piece is made entirely of wood and is joined together in a process called biscuiting. It's a first for Beckman, who has never worked on a degradable structure before. To make it fully degradable, no metals, irons, or plastics were used. He says it comes with its own set of challenges and surprises.
Well, so much of my work has been about making things that are archival, that will last and stand the test of time. And conceptually also, I think there was something really nice about not having to feel like I'm fighting against time, but really working with time.
And for those taking a stroll through the Schuylkill Center, there's always something new to discover at non-object number one.
Whoa, I don't know what that is. Slimy. Might be a fungus, might be some kind of...
For WHYY, I'm Nima Roshanya.
There's always something new to discover here.
Yeah, right,
so exciting. Yeah.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. On Monday, Philadelphia will inaugurate Jim Kenney as its next mayor, and tomorrow we'll sit down with current mayor Michael Nutter to reflect on his 8 years in office. Now, there's naturally been a lot of speculation about what Nutter might do next, and he did share one bit of information with us.
I am not an applicant for the Chip Kelly job.
Sorry, Eagles. You got to keep looking. We're looking to call it a night, so thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Hi, this is Ari Shapiro from All Things Considered, and you are about to discover my secret identity. When I'm not reporting for NPR, I tour and record with a band called Pink Martini. For the holidays, I will be both host and performer in a concert called Pink Martini, Joy to the World, a multicultural holiday spectacular. Coming here from NPR Music.
Thursday night at 8 on WHYY.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Visits can be scheduled by calling 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.